codes kill kittens and customer service is an oxymoron. One podcast has set out to make things right. This is the Unpodcast with your hosts, Scott Stratton and Allison Kramer.
Summerfest 2018 continues on the Unpodcast. We thank you. We thank you for allowing us a place in this summertime, to quote Big Willie. I'm Scott. She's Allison. Wayne behind the board. Dallas and Lola sleeping. Those are dogs. Don't worry. There's not people sleeping here. Kids watching the TVs. It's summer around this household. And we're happy to have it. I don't know where you are right now. Are you walking your doggies? Are you working out? Are you just hanging out? Or on your drive? If you're on a road trip and you're making your family listen to this right now, that's weird. You know, it's weird to subject them to this. But we thank you anyways. Children, if you're in the car, hey, this isn't what life's like. This is just a pretend show. But we value you anyways, to the point that today we save the best for today. So if this was the show you joined, well done.
This is going to be our best one?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm ready.
I think everyone's supposed to be the best one, but yeah. Anyway, because each one's supposed to get incrementally better. I don't know if that's true.
I think we get better.
Maybe worse. I don't know. Today we're going to rock Velcro, Subway, the food place, not the transportation method. IHOP. Amazon, Cineplex, movie theater, just a whole... I am overwhelmed by how good this show is going to be. So let's start it with this. Today's show brought to you by Velcro.
Oh, I do not think you're allowed to say that.
They are the unsponsor, which means I can give you the disclaimer. They have not agreed to sponsor this at all. But unsponsors, that's what happens. So Velcro, being... Velcro is one of those things that's... a brand name that has been adopted as the actual name of a
Kleenex,
whole product, like Kleenex,
Saran Wrap,
Band-Aid. What else?
That's the only ones I can think of.
Because
I say Saran Wrap, and Saran's a company.
Right.
It's actually plastic.
Plastic wrap. Gatorade. Ooh, yeah. Wayne, you got to come in a little harder here. Come on, buddy. That was your reaching.
Kleenex for sure. I didn't even know until I was an adult that
Kleenex
Band-Aid. was the company name.
Right. So, Scott. For incredible keynote speakers. Are we going to get a Scott for this conference? Like that type of thing, right? So, but this is a... Velcro came out with a whole thing about to not say Velcro. They came out with a video saying don't say Velcro when it's not Velcro.
Okay.
As not using it as the name or the verb or anything else. And they made a funny video. It has over 500,000 views for it. And we're going to play you not the one, but the response video after everybody responded. Because they came out with a whole website. And it says, not grippy grasp, not rutabaroo, always hook and loop. So hook and loop is the generic name.
No, I have never said hook and loop in my entire life.
So they said, we heard you. Our first Don't Say Velcro video received thousands of comments from over 150 countries. Some loved it, some hated it. Here's the fine print. And so it goes through, wait, there are Velcro brand trademark guidelines? And they're like, yep. 100% it's easy to follow the most. Velcro mark is always in all caps, followed by the R for the
trademark,
the word brand, and then the functional terms like hook and loop, fasteners, and closures. Voila. Let's use it in a sentence. Our products feature the Velcro R brand fasteners.
Wow.
Yeah. Can I say Velcro-ing or Velcro-it or Velcro shoes? No, never. Please don't. Velcro brand is not a verb, a noun, or a standalone word.
I thought every brand wanted to be a verb.
It should only be used like Velcro brand products or referring to a specific product such as Velcro brand straps. We repeat, do not ever say Velcro shoes or Velcro wallet or Velcro gloves.
I have said all of those things many, many times. Do I owe Velcro money?
If I can't call them Velcro shoes, what do I call them? You can identify any non-Velcro brand products by their common terms, including cell fasteners, hook and loop, closures. We get it. Hook and loop isn't in everybody's vocabulary, but calling it Velcro just wouldn't be true. To make it a little easier, here's an example. Incorrect. He helped his son Velcro his shoes. Correct. He helped his son fasten his shoes. Incorrect. I just bought some Velcro shoes. Correct. I just bought some self-fastening shoes.
No one is going to say that. I don't understand.
Why are you doing this? Why does it matter? Us lawyers have to protect our people. Using the Velcro trademark property allows us to protect the integrity of the Velcro brand and our trademark rights and protect consumers from purchasing products incorrectly identified as Velcro brand products. It's, you know, the right thing to do. So...
You guys can use unpodcast as a verb if you want to. We don't mind. We won't.
And as a verb, as using it like a train wreck, right? Like I really unpodcasted that.
Really unpodcasted that.
Yeah, tennis. Yeah. Like, we unpodcasted that game. Yeah.
Yeah.
My hair is just an unpodcast today. Oh, like that type of thing, right? So they came with the video, and it's tongue in cheek. Now, obviously, the trademarking and what they're talking about makes total sense. You have to defend your trademark, or you risk losing it. And we've had stories in the books and on the show about companies doing it well, like Jack Daniels with that band that put the CD out with the Jack Daniels label, and they offered to help pay for a new run of the CDs.
I think in this case, like the train has already left the Velcro station. Right. Like it's so far gone.
You can't say that.
It's so far gone. It's like Kleenex. Like it's so far gone.
Velcro. R with a circle, fasteners left the station. Thank
you. Hook and loop.
So they did a video of the second one. So the first one, a lot of people have seen it. The second one, not a lot of people have seen. And I think it's funnier. So it's the thank you for your feedback on the Don't Say Velcro video. Okay, so we're going to play it for you now. It's just over 2 minutes long.
Okay.
But you got to listen to it.
Velcro companies made a video. Telling you that this is hook and loop and not Velcro.
Now we know our message has been heard. Thanks to all your comments and your big colorful words.
Who are all these f***ing clowns and angry viewers asked us? Kevin says, please hook and loop your heads out of your asses. This guy really hates our lawyers and our trademark rights. Sean, he called us immoral grasping parasites. Thank you so much for all your feedback.
The worst sound ever.
So glad that you took the time to write.
Even though I wrote 104 times.
Even though you didn't love the message.
I hope it's gone down.
Lots of you are now getting it right.
As long as you know that it's hook and loop on those door shelves.
It's okay, this English dude wants us to sue ourselves. Fuck their hooks, fuck their loops, Mr. Banana wrote. Hey, at least they said hook and loop together in that quote.
We hear you, people of the world. Thousands of comments from 150 countries as far away as China, where they told us Velcro means powerful hook. And here in America, where they asked us politely to please die of genocide.
Your words mean so much to us, especially those who are constructive, offering other possible names for hook and loop. And here they are.
Rip and strip.
That's pretty clever.
Click butts.
Oh, yeah, whatever.
Fur tape.
I think that's a maybe.
Rip the strip.
That's a little bit shady.
It's scratching France.
That works for me.
This is what they call it in Germany.
Clever
Schlosschen.
Clever
Schlosschen. Yeah. Schlosschen.
Clever Schlosschen.
Romanian translation.
Hedgehog.
Smell crow.
Yeah, that's awesome, dog.
Root tuba pow.
That has a nice ring.
Woolen claw.
That's marketing.
Grippy grass.
That's not bad.
Thunder scenes.
That's the best one, you guys. Hey!
So much for all your feedback. But hook and loop, we're gonna stick with it. Hope that you all liked our second video. And don't think it's a forced pile of sh.
That was amazing.
Right?
You guys have to watch that.
You
it's
watch
not
the
enough.
Video too.
It's not enough to listen to it. You got to find the video and watch it. We'll put a link on the podcast page.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, and you
hysterical.
Can search YouTube for "Thank you for your feedback." Don't say Velcro.
Yeah, it's got like tweets and Reddit responses and stuff flash up on the screen.
There's different ways to handle things.
Do you think when they put the first video out that they knew that this was going to happen?
That was their goal, right? Because the first one is the same type of thing.
Is
right?
It?
It's very funny. They're singing. Yeah, yeah. So it's certainly. Good. I just found that was even better.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, it only has 8,000 views on that one versus the 500,000 the other one. You got to watch
it. Oh,
that.
Really?
It's so good.
Yeah. I'm going to say Velcro 85 times today. So I have a story here from Business Insider. It says, Subway is backing off breakfast, and it reveals a growing problem plaguing the restaurant industry. Subway is no longer requiring franchises to serve breakfast. The sandwich chain changed its policies to allow franchisees to opt out of serving egg-based sandwiches and opening by 7 a.m. The chain's breakfast options never caught on across the U.S. in the 8 years since Subway began serving the morning meal. Well, I think 8 years is enough to know it's not working. According to Bloomberg, the market research firm found that 43% of Subway's customers do not visit for breakfast, and 19% did not even know the chain served breakfast. And so some comments, is it like, it sounds like the eggs were pretty bad. It says they were shipped to stores as floppy disks, which was not very appealing. It says we are continually evaluating every customer touch point, including hours of operation, menu, day part, etc., and making adjustments as needed to help Subway franchisees be more successful. Each Subway location and customer base is unique, and our goal is to provide franchisees with the resources to deliver an exceptional guest experience. Have you ever walked at a Subway and thought that was an exceptional experience? Like, it's fine, but is it exceptional? Yeah. So it says the change comes at a tumultuous time for Subway. Subway's U.S. store count fell by 909 last year. It lost almost three times as many locations as it did the year before. The sandwich chain, it says they expect to lose 500 more locations this year based on projections. Franchisees and other internal Subway sources told Business Insider in recent months that up to one-third of the chain's more than 25,000 U.S. locations may not be profitable, and that franchisees were bracing for more closures. And their Subway CEO, Suzanne Greco, announced plans to retire after 45 years with the company. So it just says like they're struggling to hire and retain workers. But it sounds like they just made bad breakfast and didn't let people know they served it.
Yeah, for sure. Subway like being, Subway being the largest franchise by far.
Is it?
In North America, by far. Okay. Yeah. Oh, it's huge. So when you heard 900 stores closing, you're like, holy crap. Then you realize that's 1%.
25,800 are not profitable. Yeah, that's a huge lot.
Of course, that's the big part. And franchises are fascinating, world on its own and its own kind of bubble world of... You pay to use the brand, but then you pay them part of the fee. And
did you know they serve breakfast?
Yep.
Oh, I didn't.
I never ate it. It's just part of it's like saying, well, we need to capitalize on this. If we're not, like, who would go to Subway? Like, want to grab breakfast at Subway? Like, the only way it would ever work is if you're on campus at school or something and the only thing open is Subway. You're like, oh, I guess they have, and I've seen the eggs, the floppy disk egg. It looks like Frisbees.
That's right?
They're
gross. Just,
they're pre-done type of thing. And
I am in high school. We used to go to Subway a lot. There was one down, like, within walking distance. Mm. And you could get the round sandwiches for and a drink for, $2. So if you were really poor like I was, you
combo.
Could afford. Yeah. And that was enough food. And also, a guy I dated worked there. He was, a sandwich artist.
Yep.
And he got fired because it must have been, they closed at a certain time. I can't remember the time. Let's say they closed at 10. And I guess at 9:20, a tour bus pulled into the parking lot and he closed the shop. Yep,
is perfectly reasonable.
And he got fired.
Shut her down.
Yeah, he got fired.
Yeah, shut her down.
See, and I like Subway sometimes because Subway, where we are anyway, sometimes is the only option for a salad for me when we're out. Like, I think it's at Canada's Wonderland that we've been a bunch of times. When we go there, we'll eat at the Subway because... Mm-hmm. It's there and they have more healthy options. The kids like Subway.
Yeah.
So I'm not against Subway, but I feel like breakfast isn't niche. Like it seems outside of what they make.
Right.
And you I didn't know.
That's where it's a brand thing, right? What do you think of them? It's a
lunch.
Sub
and lunch sandwich.
One of the problems that a Subway has had has been, it's part of food is very trend based, right? Very trend based, basically, and diet based, where they can go with the ebb and flow of so when Atkins came out,
the bread and stuff.
The bread. Subway was the antichrist. It was not the place to go. And then
the pita places came out before Atkins, too. Remember, pita was
pita
huge.
Had a rocking thing on the health side of it. Now, Subway wasn't known for health
by
to
the
start.
By the way, pita is exactly the same.
If not worse. When you put the tzatziki sauce or the Caesar sauce, all the dressings.
Bread, just flat.
But their whole thing was this low-carb world. Still now, not Atkins now, but this low-carb, the keto type of thing and everything else.
Doesn't
no
fit
carbs.
Into those diets. But there's still lots of people that have sandwiches.
Of course. But there's this part of it that's not helping them. And the franchises, you bought into this juggernaut.
That dude
guaranteed
who
money.
Got was the child pornographer.
And the pedophile,
probably.
Jared, one of the most, if probably, outside of Ronald McDonald,
That's Ryan the Williams first thing well I think of.
Which is why you can't say that's not a factor.
Yeah, it is a factor.
Right, and that's a huge thing. Huge thing. And that's where you realize that all these things go against it. The franchisees are like, you know, what's going on? Like, there's not a lot of franchises out there where it's just guaranteed to print money, but that's why you join a franchise, is because you can
instead
ride off
their
name.
Starting like Scott's Sub Shop, you'd get a Subway franchise.
Right. And then so it costs you versus a huge buy-in to do it, a franchise fee. And then you got to open the place and you got to lease the place. And then you got to give them a percentage of your revenues as royalties, a percentage of your revenues as national advertising, a percentage of your revenues for local advertising.
Yeah.
And so that all on top of that, profits can be not as big as you think. And that's why you own 7 locations and you can pool your resources and everything else. I didn't realize, though, until I started speaking at franchise events and stuff, was like a lot of franchise owners are, it's up to them to find a payment processor. It's up to them to find a benefits provider for employees. Like, they have to do a lot.
Yeah.
So I just thought I was all in one. You jump, you got Chase Bank, did all your processing. They have preferred vendors.
Yeah.
And that's who's at the trade shows there, is those vendors trying to sell to the franchisees different things and systems and scheduling software and everything else. So it's still a full-blown business.
I just think the story should be Subway didn't make good enough breakfast. So now they're not selling it anymore.
Yeah, that's it, right?
But that's, you know, I don't know.
But then you have also, right, the conglomerates, the big well-known franchise brands, you know, are certainly getting a lot of backlash now. McDonald's has had huge problems. Now they've turned it around quite nicely. Huge backlash from their franchisees about all-day breakfast, about their menus, the changing, the taking away of the dollar menu, like just jumping around.
Yeah.
And trying these different things. When you're that big, it's hard to be able to do that. Tim Hortons here, which is legendary in Canada, franchisees forming their own factions to sue the parent companies. And that's what happens also when you sell, you know, the entire company gets sold to a hedge fund or a turnaround firm or anything else. But you realize just being a legacy brand isn't enough. And there's more choices now. And that's one of the biggest things I think has affected Subway and some of the other legacy brands, even if it's because Chipotle came in. They were the first disruptor. They were first fast casual chain out there, you know, not fast food, but good food fairly quickly.
Yeah.
Right, how they did it. But now the options now, right? Take things, look at things like Freshy. Like, so you being the wonderful you and wanting to eat healthy and being vegetarian, if you looked at a Plaza now and
I wouldn't choose Subway over the other ones.
Over Freshy, over anything like that.
No, I wouldn't. But I have, I haven't had bad experiences with Subway.
Right.
In that I've gotten salads there. The kids, I know the kids really like it. And I do feel good about giving them the food. It does seem.
And the local players, though, have really stepped up and gotten national, international firehouse subs. Jimmy John's and all the ones have now gone to the point and saying, okay, well, we're going to do it too.
Yeah, I'm just always like when I read that they've been serving breakfast for 8 years and I've never heard about it, that always kind of is like a bell to me because I'm like, I don't know, maybe you didn't let people know.
You haven't
know.
Heard of it and it's a huge cost for the franchise owners.
Yeah.
A huge
and to
a
be open cost. To 7 because like even if you open at 7 because you're going to serve breakfast – then those hours between like 9 and lunch, you're just standing
paying
there.
Paying labor, hydro,
and the food is out, spoiled. Just spoiling. So for sure. I don't know.
Would you have you ever heard if anybody came up to you and said, "Hey, you want to go grab a coffee at Subway?"
That would be weird.
Yeah,
yeah.
You would run.
McDonald's did a good job with the coffee.
Phenomenal job with.
And
it.
We've spoken about that
phenomenal,
before.
The McCafe side of things and how they did that was fascinating.
And I think that's partially like giving. I'm glad they gave it 8 years. I think it's very hard to make changes and know what's going to work. And I think it must be very hard as a franchise to as a company to dictate down because every franchise would be slightly different and have a different market. So where in one place, there may be some place where the breakfast at Subway is like just happens to be in the right spot or it's in a mall or like I said, the Canada's Wonderland one has lineups out the door all the time because the only other food I think is pizza.
A monopoly
so
type
if you
of
want
thing.
Any other food.
Yeah. It's like on campus. Right?
Yeah, at, you know, like that's what you're going to get.
Right.
So I think it probably is very challenging to look like as a company to direct to franchises and know what's going to work.
But the second biggest sub franchise out there, Quiznos, hemorrhaging. Hemorrhaging over the past couple of years, like just dying.
There, I've never eaten there.
There you go. There's one thing right there.
The kids don't. They didn't like it.
But they were the first kind of toasted sub. Goes through the conveyor belt with all the fixins on top.
Yeah.
But now you've got pot belly sandwiches. You've got the sandwich place. You've got a bunch of those too, yeah. right? So it's just like, it's not just...
I think food is so hard.
And even more so now than ever, where yeah. you can now, you start it differently. You can get the word out differently. You don't need to pay a national advertising fee as X percentage of your profits because you don't need to advertise that way.
No, and I see places like Whole Foods, for example, but Longo's, I don't know if they have Longo's in the States, but it's a grocery store.
It's
like
a chain here,
Whole Foods has basically a restaurant and cafe and lunch, coffee, inside the Whole Foods.
Right.
So like that's my favorite place because I have to go, if I'm going to yeah. go grocery shopping and there's a Starbucks in there, or with Whole Foods, it's their own really good coffee. I think that must make restaurants really upset because that's, you wouldn't go for dinner, but you'd go for lunch. We go for lunch to Whole yes. Foods all the time.
Yeah. It's a destination location. That's yeah. the difference of having your store as a destination. It's one of the reasons why Walmart has McDonald's in most of
yeah.
them, right? Because then you'll eat there too.
Yeah.
And it becomes a thing. It's your one-stop shop for yeah. stuff. Costco, famous for their dollar hot dogs and their food, which they make a loss on those things. But here's, it's not their prime business.
No. But right. if you're going to keep people, like if you're going to be competing with Whole Foods and Walmart yeah. and you're just a restaurant, you have to be better.
And
there has to be a reason to go.
And the newest competitor in the industry is being food delivery.
Yeah, of course. You know,
third-party food delivery companies. And then it's just like, I can get anything sent to me.
Yeah.
Would you ever get Subway delivered?
No, I wouldn't.
It's just not that, right? It's not that out of the way to say, I really want that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a fascinating, and I'm glad we're not in the business.
Yeah, I can't imagine.
Speaking of food, we got a lot of people writing to us when this was happening, asking our opinion on it. And as usual, our opinion was right. This is from Adweek. We'll explain it to you first before I go into the results in this article about IHOP. Announced on Twitter and on social media that they were changing their name to IHOB. And they first put it out and just said IHOB, and then everybody had to guess what it meant. And of course, when you let the world guess, well, you know what happens. So it turns out they're going to change to International House of Burgers instead of pancakes. And everybody's like, holy crap, why would you do that? And doing exactly what they want. And people say, what do you think, Scott?
Right?
I said, it's a marketing stunt. They're not changing anything. I was about to go speak at the Sign Association event where they do signage on stores, and I'm like, how much would that cost in the changeover? They're just like,
yeah, it's crazy.
No,
it's very expensive.
What it was promoting their new steak burger. That's what it was. And then they obviously went back to IHOP because that's exactly what would happen. The false stunt, as they say. So remember IHOP? It feels like ages ago, but really the announcement was only broke last week. While the news that the International House of Pancakes was temporarily changing their name to IHOP set the internet ablaze. New data from Foursquare. Look at you, Foursquare, still around. Suggests the marketing stunt didn't drive as many customers to the brand's various locations. Sure, the creative work from Droga5 may have sparked a crazy number of mentions. Did he beat Rocky?
Yeah, I think so.
Was Droga5 the... Anyways, the Dolph Lundgren guy? Okay. Yeah, thank you. For the brand, including some sick burns from Wendy's. Those were fantastic.
Wendy's is good for that anyway.
On social media, but location technology company Foursquare found that the stunt didn't do much to impact foot traffic to IHOP locations. So what happens in stores the week following the big reveal? Foursquare found that women actually visited the chain restaurant less in the week following the stunt, while there was only a slight bump in the number of men who went in for burgers or pancakes or who knows.
I don't think you can make that related to that.
Overall, foot traffic was pretty flat in the week. So the brand saw a 4.6% increase in visits from male customers in the days following the burger announcement, but there was a 2.2% decrease in the number of female customers visiting the chain. The company is able to measure foot traffic of its own app users as well as users of partner apps. All data was aggregated and normalized against census data, according to the company. This is the latest manifestation of a longstanding trend of QSRs trying to push consumers to visit during off-peak hours, explains Sarah Spagnolo, Director of Communications and Editor-at-Large at Foursquare. There is an Editor-at-Large at Foursquare?
I know. That's the real story here.
It's really. We buried the lead. Yeah. It's something we've looked at before when McDonald's and Taco Bell introduced all-day breakfast, for example. In this case, while the IHOP stunt drove a ton of buzz, which is valuable in its own right, Foursquare's foot traffic data shows it didn't deliver an actual boost in foot traffic. This is the data all marketers should all be paying attention to. The update, a rep from IHOP responded with the following statement. Foursquare's findings don't completely or accurately reflect what we're seeing in our restaurants. Overall, we're pleased with the early results and the guest feedback we've heard related to our new steak burgers. This had to get a plug in that right there at the end. Yeah, we buried the lead. Foursquare, still happening.
Yeah, that's really the story. So IHOP has burgers. That's the story to me. I'm like, I don't know.
Have you eaten at an IHOP?
I have.
I think I have once. You? In Canada, there isn't really, except States, Niagara
we
Falls.
We went once with the kids.
Did we go
Yeah, there? We went to, we, yeah. We
in Nashville? Why would we go there if it was a Waffle House there?
There's no, it was Waffle House.
Thank you. Do not
Sorry.
Ever confuse anything with Waffle House. Thank you very much.
Also, I would have assumed House of Breakfast, not Burgers.
Yeah.
That's right. True, so, Breakfast.
Well done. Yeah, that was one of the biggest answers people were giving was House of Breakfast, and... Yeah, it's just it's a stunt for stunt's sake. And what is Buzz worth? Well, we're talking about IHOP, so I guess there you go. But
and we found out Foursquare's still gone.
Please do not mistake it for Waffle House ever again.
So this is interesting, I think, and I didn't know. So I had noticed that over the years that when we order things from Amazon, which we do a lot, mm-hmm. that there is not a lot of consistency with how they are brought to the house.
Right.
Right? So sometimes... they ring the doorbell and there's a person and I have to sign something. Sometimes they leave the package outside and they ring the doorbell and they walk away. Sometimes
right.
they leave the package and they walk away. They don't ring the doorbell. And also sometimes they're delivery looking vans, like white truck kind of vans. And sometimes they're cars. Like there didn't seem to be any consistency. And so in reading this, I learned why. And maybe other people know this already, but it was new information to me. This is from TechCrunch.com. Amazon has gotten flack in the past for some of the challenges its crowdsourced last mile delivery drivers face. But now it's offering those with entrepreneurial ambitions the option to do more. Instead of showing up for gig work, drivers can opt for a new program where Amazon helps them establish their own delivery business. The program will include access to Amazon's delivery technology, hands-on training and discounts on a suite of assets and services, including the vehicle leasing and insurance, the retailer says. This means drivers won't have to use their own cars, as in the crowdsourced delivery program known as Amazon Flex, which explains why it's always different cars. This gives them more space for organizing packages, the ability to use parking spots for delivery vehicles, and the ability to haul extra equipment like straps and dollies. Amazon says the earning potential for a successful owner is as much as $300,000 in annual profit operating a fleet of 40 vehicles. I don't know if their average deliverer is going to have 40 vehicles, but if you own 40 vehicles and you're making $300,000, that seems not that great to me, but
right,
okay.
Right.
And then it says, for business owners who don't need logistics experience, Amazon notes, will be offered discounts on the customized delivery vans, branded uniforms, fuel, they can offer a discount on fuel, comprehensive, they just own everything, comprehensive insurance coverage and more, deals the retailer pre-negotiated on their behalf, which is, they pre-negotiated gas prices.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. It says, this also addresses some of the problems the gig work flex drivers face. Gas prices would often cut far too much into the profits, a lack of insurance, and the general challenges associated with trying to deliver packages from an unbranded small car. So they looked creepy before, and now they're going to have Amazon Prime trucks. So basically, Amazon has gone into competing with UPS, FedEx. They're starting their own delivery service. With you as their driver, and if you want to own your own business, this is one way you can do it. So what do you think?
We've been saying for a while that, you know, it's just a matter of time before Amazon just makes their own or buys the courier company, right? One of the big ones. And the logistics, no pun intended, but the logistics of, you know, having a delivery company is immense, even for Amazon. But the struggle for this and every retailer out there in this e-commerce driven world is that last mile.
Yeah.
Right. That's what costs the most, is to get the package then to the house from the distribution center. And, you know, the Amazon bought Whole Foods. And one of the reasons that where we all had speculated was it was just gives them this real stranglehold in the suburbia centers where they can then use that to deliver food. And they're already doing a whole prime pricing thing in Whole Foods. And they're already rolling it out very effectively. But it's got to solve this problem. And you have this world where people were, look, we need jobs that will, you know, replace sometimes the jobs that are being taken over and taken away, right? And every generation, there's been an article somewhere. I got a graphic of it on our computer about the robots taking over from the 20s.
I was going to say, I thought our packages 60s, were going to be flying to us. 80s, I didn't realize 2000s, this is still a problem. Right?
So I love this idea. I love the people. I love people who do the food delivery that's from Grubhub and Uber Eats and everything else. I love this gig economy type of thing. If it works well, if they're treated well and they're actually paid, they can make a living doing it.
But you know that 40 trucks that they're talking about? Mm-hmm. 40 trucks. $300,000 works out to you make $7,500 per truck in a year.
Mm-hmm.
Who's going to owe 40 trucks?
Yeah,
you have crazy. To pay your workers. Yeah. You're not making any money. Like, it's a weird right. number.
Yeah. But it's in multiples, right? Like, it's just, that's like a franchise. You're going to make $100,000 on one, but if you have five of them, you make $500,000 a year. So yeah. it's like, it's... I notice it too, right? More often than not, the people dropping off our packages are usually random dudes. It's a rental van, usually, or a rider van or a car.
Yeah.
So it's just like,
and I didn't know that that was like an Uber kind of, like, I didn't realize I didn't realize that that was what that was, but this explained it to me.
And this is going to take a dent in especially the United States Postal Service.
Yeah. There was a comment in the story actually about, and it says the changes come at a time when there's been debate about Amazon's financial impact on the U.S. Postal Service. But with this new program, Amazon could reduce its reliance on outside partners.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure it lowers their costs, which is what they want. So,
yeah. And very profitable for the United States Postal Service, much to the against the popular opinion. Yeah, I think it's great. Like, meaning the ability of people to be able to do this as a job.
Yeah,
I think it's very cool. I think our world revolves around people driving products places. It's, without truck drivers, our world doesn't revolve. And this is part of the transportation part. You still have to get products there.
I like
that
they can get insurance. Like, mm-hmm. I didn't realize those people driving our packages didn't have insurance. Well, maybe in Canada,
but they have to get their own. Right? Yeah. That's the problem, is you have to get it, then you're like, you're a commercial vehicle.
Yeah.
And you're in a different world of insurance. Yeah. That's why you can't drive a lot of places Uber. They'll ask you now, signing up for insurance, they're like, are you delivering things?
And then you're delivering people
or things. All right, this is from barchart.com, and this is something at Wayne. Have you ever had a hankering for movie theater popcorn?
Yeah.
Would you ever get it delivered?
No.
Well, just because you said that, Cineplex is going to do it. Because you said no. Okay.
I think this is going to be the last straw of us seeing movies in theaters, because we've really stopped going to the movies, because we have the basement and this beautiful setup in the basement. And last couple times we went to the movies, we were sitting there thinking we'd rather be at home in our basement.
Yep. Bags of popcorn are shown during the Cineplex Entertainment Company annual general meeting. Cineplex has started offering delivery of concession stand snacks to customers in 60 communities throughout Ontario, Alberta, BC, and Quebec. Cineplex president and CEO Ellis Jacobs says the company has partnered with Uber Eats to deliver popcorn, hot dogs, candy, nachos, and soft drinks because customers have long been wanting movie theater snacks at home or in the office.
Long been wanting.
Now, I think none of this is true. The offering comes months after Cineplex tested delivery in university towns in southern Ontario. Okay, hang on a second.
University towns.
You're testing out drunk and or high students wanting some snackies.
Yep.
Versus the general public. Until
7-Eleven starts delivering.
And they want a $7 large soda pop.
It's certainly not financially like
and the best $9 choice. Bag of popcorn.
You can get 99 cents of popcorn and put it in the microwave and you have the same thing pretty much. Although a little better for you, I guess, maybe.
To combat the unpredictability and the popularity of on-demand streaming services that are increasingly convincing film lovers to stay at home and watch movies, Cineplex has expanded concession stand products, offered VIP seatings, and open rec room gaming bars and Playdium arcades. These ventures have drawn in a young demographic that is also likely to be a fan of delivery service, says Ellis. I know when I was studying for exams, I didn't want to leave the house, but I still wanted a treat.
All right, I have a question, because you worked at a movie theater.
I did.
All right, so...
I'm not sure if I told everybody that.
We were just talking about... you mentioned Costco and the hot dogs, right? And that they don't make money off the hot dogs. Mm-hmm. It's like a loss leader. It makes people stay longer and whatever.
It's good hot dogs, yeah.
So... I know the food at a movie theater is expensive, but I never thought they were in the food business. It just never occurred to me until I read this. I was like, you make your money off the movie.
Yeah,
the
movie theater does not.
But they don't make them. So they make their money off the food.
100%.
Which is why they're happy to do this. Because I was like, if people want the popcorn, shouldn't you want them to come in and see the movie?
The entire point of the movie is for you to buy concessions.
So the movie's the loss leader.
Yes.
See, that like totally flips how I thought it worked.
So what happens is, I'm not sure if it's the same today,
okay.
But it's on a sliding scale. So when a Blockbuster comes out, the movie theater makes a very, very, you know what it is? It's gas stations. Gas stations make very little on gas.
Okay.
they make money on cigarettes and chocolate bars and drinks and everything else. That's
I just didn't think it was, because when I read this, I was like, well, why would a movie theater do that? That's just going to make people want to not go to the movie theater.
So you get a very small amount when the movie comes out.
Yeah.
And then the longer it stays in your theater, the more you make percentage of the ticket.
Okay.
So it gives you incentive to keep paying back.
Yeah.
Because, so the mostly the studio makes the money. The distributor makes the money.
See, now that makes more sense to me, because when I first read it, I was like, now we're never going to go to a movie theater.
Why concessions cost so much.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That's what you're doing for that. Fascinating. Right? Yeah. So it's a 6 cent bag of popcorn for $7. That's why.
Yeah.
To make their money on. That's also why they say no outside food and drink.
Even though you bring it in.
Yeah. Your pack of Junior Mints in your sleeve.
Sometimes I bring moon cheese because I like moon cheese into the movie.
Yeah, I get it. And that was
fascinating. I wouldn't order popcorn, but I'm sure some students will.
I just can't eat popcorn. I can't digest it. Yeah, it's funny. I used to live off of it, because that's at the end of the night, you wouldn't throw away the popcorn. You get these. There are yellow see through bags that you'd get, and you just take it and you bring it to whatever party you're going to, and you were the belle of the ball when you showed up with that bag of popcorn. So awesome. All right, made up word. Let's do it.
Don't make any sense. Don't mean no offense. It brings laziness. What is all this craziness?
So, as you far well know, maybe six out of the seven of you know, but if you haven't heard, you send us a made-up word. We do it on the show. You get the dough.
Oh, good rhyme, baby.
Yeah, it's a book. It's not money. We'll put, you pick your pick a see a word out there that you think is what? Why would you do that? It's made up. It's two words put together, which is called a pantomime, right? Two words combined. Yes. Okay. So I don't know what it is. You look at it; it's ridiculous. We pick yours. We'll send you one of our books, and you just pick which one you want. Some of you, the dedicated few of you, will have sent multiple words, so we appreciate that. This one, submitted to us by listener Christine, is grout fit. Groutfit. Groutfit. Wayne. 2 weeks in a row, just stumped.
Like an outfit that you wear for doing like work around the house or something.
That would be logical, but wrong.
Grout.
Groutfit is an outfit made of gray.
What does that mean? How do you make an outfit of gray?
You're wearing all gray.
Why? Because it looks like grout?
No, it's gray outfit.
Groutfit. Oh, I see. They just took the G and the R.
Blue outfit.
Bloutfit?
Bloutfit, yeah. It's a thing.
Really?
Somebody took a poll, and the poll was, what Christine sent to me was, here's showing in a mom's group, and it was a poll of who here over 35 knows the term groutfit and what it means, and everybody's like, no. And then they would say, I was under 35, and about 30% knew what groutfit was.
Oh, really? Fascinating. I had no idea. So, but I'm over 35, yeah, so that
greatly,
makes sense.
But greatly upsetting. What grout fit? Like,
I don't know.
Today I'm rocking a grout fit.
Rout fit. Yout fit.
Gout fit. Millennials ruining the English language.
Well,
right?
Then what's a green outfit? It would also be a grout fit.
Yep.
That's just confusing people. Are you wearing a grout fit or are you wearing a grout fit?
Yeah. I don't know. What are you wearing tonight?
I don't want to clash.
I'm wearing a grout. God damn it, Vanessa. So. Anyway, thanks for the growth, Christine.
That's all we have for today.
That's all. Enjoy your summer in Australia. Enjoy your winter.
And we'll see you next week.
Bye-bye.
Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and visit theunpodcast.com. And remember, friends don't let friends use QR codes.